Welcome into the MTOM Show podcast. I'm Paul Yeager, and as you can tell, we're out in the cornfield. In front of a field. Kevin Lukey from Chevron is joining us. Kevin, what's your title with Chevron?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Great to be here today at the fair with the cornfield in the back, right? So I'm the president of Chevron Renewable Energy Group. We're based in Ames, Iowa.
So you are based in Iowa, but the company is global. We'll get into some of your background and where you've been with them.
Yep.
We're here at the Iowa State Fair. You're going to see a whole lot of people passing us everywhere we go today. What's your first Iowa State Fair memory?
So many years ago, when I was a youngster, I was in FFA. And at that time, they have an usher program, and I think it still exists, but it's changed a little bit. So I'm looking here at the grandstand, and so I spent 2 weeks here, two different years, right? 1 week or two fairs here at the grandstand, doing ushering in the grandstand for all the events, from tractor pulls to car races to country music to rock and roll.
We have done. A few years ago, this same type of podcast, we interviewed a gal who was this organized supervisor of them.
Yep.
And all the years, and talked about the crowds and trying to be a high school student, maintaining someone who's maybe been a little too involved in their in a certain activity when a concert rolls. We can hear, and I think you can probably hear it too, there's music going on in the grandstand, and so where you're set up today at this stand,
that's right,
it's probably really giving you flashbacks.
Exactly. And I can imagine the challenges she had. I think I listened to it. She's the director of the ushers. They've changed the program a lot because they used to just let us roam free during the day. Now they got a lot more structure, and there's a good reason for that, Paul.
You can't all just be hanging out
exactly
all day long.
Right, exactly.
That is part of the fair. So that's your first set of memories.
Yep.
And then over time, as you pick up things with Chevron, what was the role of a company prior to renewables? I mean, what did oil and Iowa and agriculture, what was that combination?
Yeah, and so, the energy and ag space has sort of had a rocky relationship over the last several years, right? Clearly, Chevron has been using ethanol for many years in our gasoline, and so we've needed to use that for many different reasons for our gasoline pool. So there is a long relationship with ethanol and Chevron, but it's really changed a lot with the purchase of Renewable Energy Group. Really started with Chevron's belief 4 or 5 years ago that the future of energy is lower carbon. And so when you go down and think through that process, it really drives you to the things that we're doing in renewable energy and ethanol and all the other things that are happening in this space.
Well, when you talk about the rocky relationship, I guess you could say, I mean, I guess I'd ask you, are you working for a big oil company? Is that still a term that when you hear that, does that, come on now, we can do better than talking about that.
Yeah, and so that's one of the questions that I've gotten a lot in the last year since I've been in this role is about big oil and the relationship hasn't been real strong with agriculture, but that's really changed a lot. And you know, a little bit later today, I'll talk about some of the joint ventures that Chevron has, particularly with Bunge and others. And it's really clear that if you believe the future of energy is lower carbon, that it's gonna take ag and energy to be like this, Paul.
Yeah.
We can't be really fighting each other. The solutions are going to be complex, difficult, and it's going to take all of us working together.
Just a few days before we recorded this, there was yet another lawsuit, Iowa and Nebraska governors petitioning the EPA over renewable fuels and E15 and E10. And so there is still always this constant battle goes on. How political can a group that has interests in Texas and Iowa and Minnesota and Illinois get in the middle of something like that?
Yeah, and so I think it comes back to our belief. And if our belief is the future of energy is lower carbon, then you have to really be positively going in that direction. The E15 discussion, we have been on record, Paul, to say that we support E15, right? And so what the governors and the attorney generals are doing in this state, we believe that's going to enable lower carbon. And so, yes, that is very much supported by our company.
Very much something that you have to do. And one of the things you have to do are go along for a crazy ride. So let's go. Do you navigate the fair much in a golf cart?
This will be the first.
Okay. I'm going to warn you, right now we have an opening. We're going to take it.
Okay.
We're recording this on not quite, it's a weekend day. It's not the busiest of weekend days. There was one yesterday that was ridiculous. We're going to try to make a U-turn and go around. So we had the cornfield behind us. What was the cornfield representing as part of your booth?
Yeah, and so it's really the, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the tie between energy and agriculture is really becoming more and more, we've got to work together. And so that's the theme here is that energy and ag need to be solving both food challenges that we have as society and the energy challenges that we have as well.
I'm going to do my best to listen to everything you say, Kevin. So, but if you feel that I'm a little distracted, I don't want to hit anybody and you be in the spot. So,
yeah, that's a good idea.
We've got a tractor.
Yes.
And then we have some of the folks from the company that are here today. So what's the goal of the booth?
Yeah, so maybe I'll just start a little bit with the tractor, Paul. Over 25 years, Chevron has sponsored a tractor restoration competition for high schoolers. And so that is the winning competition. Our competitor, he's from Texas, first time out of Texas
here
visiting our Iowa State Fair. And so it's a competition that really showcases young students' abilities to be able to refurbish tractors. It's a great program. We've been sponsoring it for 25 years. The rest of the booth really focuses on sort of our renewable energy, the things that we're doing in the renewable energy space. Starts with our belief that the future of energy is lower carbon. And then you start seeing some of the goals that we have in there to produce 100,000 barrels a day of renewable fuels by 2030. And then we talk about the feedstocks that we're using, the raw materials. Started with soybean oil. Now we use cooking oil. We use canola oil. We use corn oil from ethanol companies. It's a byproduct. And then last but not least, we're using animal fats and greases from slaughterhouses as well, all to make renewable fuels.
Well, and that's the concept I've heard over the years, kind of the way the industry has evolved with renewables of, we'll take any source.
Exactly.
Feedstock, you know, you've had that technology come with some companies where they take bio, switchgrass, those types of things. So you're saying restaurants have waste, but it still doesn't mean it's the end of the line for that product.
Yeah, for example, used cooking oil. We partner with a company that collects it from restaurants. We transform it into biodiesel, and now we're using that biodiesel in the trucks by the company that's going out collecting the used cooking oil. So it's really a circle of used cooking oil, starting with soybean oil as the original source. So it's an amazing story. These feedstocks were all byproducts in the original state, and you know, over the years, REG really found ways to convert them into fuel using sort of the innovation that we have in Ames.
Renewable Energy Group is your REG that you're referring to. That is a recent acquisition.
That's right.
REG had Iowa roots. For a while, it had some pretty high profile board members. What was the reasoning, or the target, and how did that relation, and how have the two then come together?
Yeah, so again, it starts with the belief. The future of energy is lower carbon. Chevron started to look around, how do we advance that in a pretty fast way? And Renewable Energy Group as a company kind of rose to the top of the list. And why is that? Over 20 years, they started in Ralston, Iowa, using soybean oil. Now we have a plant in Ralston, in Newton, in Mason City, in Albert Lea, Minnesota, and Madison, Wisconsin. And we have two in Illinois, one renewable diesel plant in Louisiana, a couple in Europe. And so that REG put all these facilities together and was developing the technology. Chevron looked around and said, holy cow, this is a great company, great people. They're doing the stuff that we want to enable lower carbon fuels.
It's common in any line of business, not just agriculture. Somebody's an expert in an area that you would like to get into.
Correct.
Acquisitions happens in equipment all the time.
That's right.
Energy is no different, is
that's
what
right.
it sounds like you're saying.
That's exactly right. And that was the strategy. And it really, you know, I talked about a goal of 100,000 barrels a day by 2030. REG alone is 30,000 barrels a day of renewable fuels that they're producing. We have an expansion in Louisiana. It's $1 billion to be done next year. That's going to get us over 50,000 barrels a day. And so this company, REG, really had a lot of the things that Chevron needed to advance their lower carbon future.
And it sounds like it's a way that you can be an expert in something.
Yes.
Not parachuting from the outside, but coming inside.
That is correct.
Because if I was an Iowa, Illinois company saying, I'm going to Texas to start prospecting for oil and drilling, they're going to look at me like I don't know what I'm doing.
And that's exactly what Chevron's seen with REG. Is
yeah.
Company of experts based in the location where the feedstocks and the innovation occurred all along. So it's been a really strong match. And you know, we've been at it together for a year. The culture has been very, very similar. Very trusting culture based on teamwork. And so I dare say that it was really a match made in heaven,
okay,
so to speak, for both of us, right? So,
what is also at this booth is, I'm looking at the STEM zone,
yes,
over your shoulder.
Correct.
To work in any of the facilities, you do need to have a strong STEM background. So is that part of the thought of celebrating the science and technology?
Yeah, especially here today, it's Chevron Day at the fair, right? And so Chevron has been a large sponsor of STEM. You think about what it's going to take in the renewable energy or traditional energy, really society in general. We need strong technology backgrounds. And so this is a booth that has been put together to advance STEM education. You'll see lots of kids, but you see lots of grown-ups in here as well. And it's a way for folks to get interested in something that's vital for our business and really for the business in general.
Kevin, let's keep moving because, you know, I'm probably cutting off people from the booth. Now, if you've been to the fair and you've watched anything that we do on Iowa PBS, we have different features that happen, and I can hear one going on which is going to alter where we go. I hear the legendary band Deloney is up there playing. Paul is Canadian. What is Chevron's relationship like with your neighbors to the north and south? Because renewable fuels, corn,
yep,
all of this stuff is hugely, I mean, those are our two biggest trading partners.
Yep.
What's the relationship like now with our neighbors to the north and south in the industry, the way you see it?
Yeah, and so I'll just talk maybe a little bit about the renewable fuels part of the industry, Paul. We have a plant in Washington, the state of Washington. It uses canola as a feedstock to make renewable diesel or a biodiesel as well, right? And so all of that canola, all of it comes from Canada. And so we're getting feedstocks today from Canada. On the southern borders, we're getting animal fats, greases, tallows from Brazil, from Latin America. Those are coming into our plant in Louisiana. And again, we're making those renewable diesel there. Now, on the flip side, where our products are sold,
yep,
many of the products that we sell are enabled by government policies. And that has been very much an evolving space. And so California was really the starter for low carbon fuels and the standards. It's moved to Oregon, to Washington, and now Canada is very active in this space. And so we're selling products produced in Albert Lea, Minnesota, or
sure,
Mason City, selling those in Canada as we speak. So it goes both ways. We're using those as feedstock sources and places to sell our products.
The hog industry just had a major sea change from California. Help me out on understanding energy. How does California, whatever happens there, affect your company as a whole on the renewable side?
Yeah, so one of the positive things, I won't get into much on the pork part, but I mentioned they have a lower carbon fuel standard that is trying to get lower carbon fuels. I spent a lot of the time today discussing biodiesel and renewable diesel. We also make renewable natural gas. And so we have 30 dairies where we're using digesters, started in California, but now they're in the Midwest, where we're actually producing renewable natural gas and then selling that largely in California because it's a very incentivized market for that product for us as well. So it's a real win for us in that state. To use agriculture byproducts, manure, to make energy.
Do you find that the company in renewables has to be more in tune with what governments do or what customers do?
Yeah, so it's a both. It's an and world in that space, right? I'll just use many of our customers, and one of our large customers is the Union Pacific Railroad. Mm-hmm. And the Union Pacific has made commitments how much that they were going to lower the carbon of the fuels that they use. And so they've come to us, and we're working today with them, and they're a great partner for our biodiesel and renewable diesel to lower the carbon or greenhouse gases of the fuel that they use. So that's on the customer side of it,
yep. Paul.
On the policy side, our business really needs policy support to be able to survive. It's not economic yet to be able to produce all of these products without policy support. And so that's where working with, you know, the states and the federal government is so, so important for our industry.
I guess you bring up a point that I hadn't thought of, but outside of a ag state, we'll just take Nevada, not, yep. you know, an yep. Oregon or something. I mean, Oregon's agriculture is huge in a lot of yep. states, but is that an opportunity
yeah.
that Chevron sees for both, I guess, educating, informing, opportunity for growth? How do you see those states that don't have a huge footprint in a cornfield or a soybean field?
Yeah, so what you see, and we see this in the northeast of the United States right now a lot, Paul, is folks are trying to, you know, I'll just use fuel oil for their furnaces in the wintertime. They're trying to figure out, how do I have a lower carbon fuel to be able to be used to lower my greenhouse gas emissions? And so you have an unlikely bedfellow
yeah.
In some sense, where you got the state of New York or the state of New Jersey needing to find a solution for a lower carbon fuel, hence the corn and the beans and
yeah.
the things that produce those lower carbon fuels. And so we are finding many states that aren't traditional agriculture, like maybe Iowa or Illinois, to be able to be a partner with us in really providing fuels that they need and we need to lower carbon footprint.
What's the biggest challenge that you're going to face as a renewable side of the ledger here in the next 2 years, 2 to 4 years?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of them, right? We need to make sure that we're educating the public on the food and fuel discussion. Oftentimes I hear that, all of the soybeans or corn are diverting, you know, food mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. you.
Long
and
time,
I.
It's long been a criticism.
Yeah, and so that education needs to continue to make sure that it's an and world. We need the food and we need the fuel, and both can survive, and it's okay and it's the right answer. I think the other area, Paul, is to be able to have the debate on we want to have sort of a, during this energy transition, a lower carbon solutions. And what we're seeing in some places is, guess what? Electric vehicles are the solution. They are a solution, but not the only solution. And so finding the debate with the policymakers to be able to say, hey, let's figure out what our in-use goals are and not have a solution dictated to us is going to be very, very important going forward in the next couple of years.
Two things. Carbon, we'll get back to that in a minute. A policy of all. So just like we talked about a few minutes ago, the whole we'll take sources of energy from wherever, you're saying that the fueling of America and the world is going to be many sources?
Absolutely.
You don't see electric as the only answer?
No.
You don't see oil as the only answer?
It's going to take us all, right? Yeah. It's going to take wind, solar, electricity. It's going to take biofuels as well. All of those to create to meet the challenges that we have in the energy transition. And in the world economy is growing. So we need more of it, if you will.
What do you see on the regionalization of energies? I've brought this up before on this podcast. I had a boss a few years ago that said, to him, energy made sense where the energy was created is where it should be consumed more. So if it's Texas, Oklahoma, oil. If it's Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, it's renewables. If it's Nevada, California, it's solar.
Yeah.
What do you see of that thinking? Will that win out over a different thinking?
So I think it's going to be part of the solution, Paul. It won't be the only solution, if you will, right? You know, for example, what we do on the renewable fuels, space with corn and corn oil from ethanol and soybean oil and used cooking oil. A lot of that is generated here, and we do have uses through biodiesel or renewable diesel for those feedstocks here. But I'll just use sustainable aviation, right? That's a product that are going to need to be sourced from other feedstocks besides what is available, if you will, right?
Anything can happen when you're talking Indeed. At the fair, and
that's the fun part of the fair.
That is the fun part, and to me, I think a discussion with, and I've asked this in the past too, right now, you mentioned about educating folks. You have a good opportunity for, I mean, yes, there's a lot of agriculture interest here.
Yep.
There's a lot of city interest too.
Yep.
Do you find that there is a willingness to learn by those in the city and in the country about and what you're doing, what agriculture is doing, what energy is doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why, you know, we're right on the main grant course here today, right? And it's really to have that conversation with the urban folks and the rural folks, and they're really trying to learn more. They're curious and saying, who is Chevron? Why is Chevron interested in Iowa? Why is Chevron interested in the renewable fuels business? And so people are curious and they're asking the questions because it's new and it's changing and it will continue to change.
And that brings me back to one of the other things you had said was about carbon. Carbon pipelines are a popular topic in several states right now. Where's Chevron? Where's the renewable line of that? Is that something you're watching or involved in?
Yeah, so it goes back to our belief that the future of energy is lower carbon, right? And so what those pipelines are trying to do is to provide lower carbon ethanol to be used in the fuels. So in theory, what they're doing is the right sort of path that we're on. The question is, you know, how do they get there? You know, is it a pipeline? Do they sort of put the carbon in a different form at the ethanol plants? That's something they'll have to sort out through technology and the rest, right?
But you have to watch it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you have to figure out where your lane's going to be in that.
Yeah, and we are a large ethanol consumer, right? And so we're wanting to understand as we try and produce lower carbon fuels, can we get lower carbon ethanol along the way? And so that's really part of the part of the things that we need to watch and understand, if you will, right? We're not actively involved in those pipelines today, but we are actively watching them.
I would think you have to be.
Yeah.
You can't ignore one of the biggest stories in your key areas.
Oh, that's right.
Of what your group is, at least on the renewable side, is doing.
That's right.
Understanding agriculture as a whole, as we close up here, do you think the consumer, I guess I asked you about the consumer and their dictation of things. Today, is your biggest target those consumers?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of all of the above, Paul, right? It's our policymakers really need to work with them, educate them, if you will. It's customers. I talked about people like the Union Pacific. Mm-hmm. And then it is ultimately the consumers that are really making choices and really helping them understand that there are more alternatives than just buying an electric vehicle, right? Yeah. And what does that mean? And what is the total life cycle emissions of that whole value chain versus just looking at the tailpipe emissions of electric car?
Well, I appreciate you going along with the crazy idea to ride along in a golf cart for a little bit among the people.
Enjoyed
you
it.
Just never know when anybody's going to stop by and say hello.
Indeed.
And when the sun comes out and it gets to be a little brighter on things. So, Kevin, I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Great.
Thank you so much.
Great to chat, Paul. Appreciate the time.
Kevin Lukey with Chevron on the renewable side, president of that group. And that's it for this MTOM podcast. New episodes each and every Tuesday. You never know where we're going to be, in a cornfield or in a golf cart.
Indeed.
Thanks for watching. Have a great day.